Gentlemen, the terrorists appear to have complete control of our imagination. It's only a matter of time before our imaginations start running wild.
Escape from Imagination Land. Part 1 of 3. Critical thinking question. What are some strategies that you could use to tell the difference between having a debate with somebody and watching them have an anxiety attack? Everybody, this is Brett. Today is September 27th. It'll almost be Halloween. Got a two-person horse costume that I'm waiting to take out of mothballs. But anyway, this is a three-part mini-series where we're going to examine the use of fantasy to suppress personal and political anxiety, the relationship between personal and political anxiety, and also how outrage and attack are used to manage the disruption of the fantasies that most people are so comfortable with. And of course, what does all that have to do with school, childhood, and adolescence? For years, once I started to gain an understanding of the principle of non-aggression, the philosophy of liberty, the principle of self-ownership, property rights, Austrian economics, I have to admit that I was rather hostile towards other people who failed to grasp or seemed to fail to grasp these concepts that I thought were so simple and so obvious. This hostility was never going to get me anywhere. And you can hear it in the early days of this show for sure. You can hear it on my previous work with Wes Bertrand on Complete Liberty. And you certainly would have heard it in my own personal interactions with the people who fit that description of seeming to fail to understand these simple truths. I always thought that the purpose of a conversation or a debate on any of these issues was information exchange. That the person that I was talking to was open to the idea that if the conversation progressed, there was a possibility that they might be able to persuade me or that I might be able to persuade them. Now today, I believe that neither of those things, for the other person, neither of those things are the goal of these conversations or debates. They are certainly not open to the idea or the possibility of being persuaded by me. But the truth is, they're not even talking to me, but to themselves. Because while there are shallow and desperate religious, utilitarian, and pragmatist counterarguments to the principle of non-aggression, when most people are first confronted with this idea, and the application of this idea consistently, they really don't know what to do, except feel incredibly anxious about what they believe, what they've been supporting, or at the very least, what they've been tolerating. Because I believe that people want to be good. And pretty much throughout all of our history, the idea of goodness, the idea of morality has been used by a very, very small and immoral group of people, even though that group has changed throughout time, to control a very, very large group of people who are actually moral, who actually care about doing the right thing. The problem is, the things that they've always been told were right, in many cases, were evil. You should prepare yourself, if you have these conversations, for anxiety, outrage, attack, coming your way from the person that you're confronting. I don't believe that this is because these people are stupid or immature. The reality of this, which I really believe that many of them know deep down, is undeniable, is simply overwhelming. It's overwhelming. And the recognition of this, for me, has led me to really want to spend time and effort finding ways to develop more of a gentle touch in talking to people like this. Because I've realized in the last year that I, throughout most of my personal life as an adult, had been using similar types of avoidance and anxiety management strategies to not want to look at some pretty significant truths in my own life. And I think this is even more common than the political anxiety management for most people. 3 or 4 days after I released the relationship show that I did with Mike and Stephanie from Pork Therapy, a show where I actually revealed some of these missteps and misunderstandings from my own past, some of it even relatively recently. 3 or 4 days after that, I recorded an episode of School News that no one will ever hear because I really, really disliked it. I was not happy with the tone. I was not happy with the approach. And that's extremely rare. I mean, I usually work on these shows until I think they're good. But this, I wasn't feeling this one. And I wound up just taking it to the dump. Because it reminded me of the early days of understanding these ideas, where there was a tremendous amount of anger and acrimony. And there wasn't any empathy for people who weren't willing to embrace these concepts. There was very little understanding, and there was very little curiosity about why. And that's not exactly the path that I want to be on. Now, of course, this doesn't mean that we will never rip on anybody again. There's plenty of room for humorous criticism in the show, and I think you'll hear some of it in these next 3 episodes as I attempt to kind of purge myself of some of this hostility. But while I was recording that episode of School News, I received an email. The episode was incidentally just really taking 2 public school teachers to task in a very, very harsh way. I received an email right in the middle of recording this while taking a break from a public school teacher. I'll make sure that that is in this show somewhere. At this point, a bunch of different threads of thought kind of appeared in front of me that I knew were all related somehow, but I couldn't figure out how. One, this email from this teacher who was reaching out to me, not the first that I've received. Number 2, my dissatisfaction with my attitude and approach in this episode of School News, especially considering the revelations that were presented in the previous show about relationships. And a family experience that I've had recently, I decided that I should try to weave all of these threads together by doing a car podcast on September 18th. Well, I recorded it during my commute. I sat in my driveway for a half an hour afterwards, recording more, threw it all in the car the next day, and recorded for another 45 minutes to an hour. That's a lot of content. As I tried to edit it, I realized that it was so disjointed and all over the place that I had to just re-record it. And I decided to bring in an old friend of the show, one of the best friends of the show, Wes Bertrand from Complete Liberty. In fact, you could say that School Sucks Podcast itself is a spin-off of Complete Liberty, and Wes's work has been a major influence on this show. So he and I sat down a few days ago to explore this topic, or group of topics, and try to make sense of it all. But today, this is just the introductory portion that I did record in my car, and two more related shows will follow. Thank you very much for listening. I hope everybody is doing well. Take care.
Everybody, this is Brett, and today is September 18th, 2010. I am in the car. I actually just stopped and bought a $10 microphone at Radio Shack for the sole purpose of recording a podcast on the way home. I have a lot of thoughts that I want to explore. I can't promise this is going to be particularly well organized because I am in the car, and actually right now I have to go through a toll booth in Portsmouth. So, but I just can't, oh, hold on, shh, hi, have a good day. Oh man, I love a good toll booth. All right, so I can't promise that this is going to be particularly well organized because I'm also trying to focus on driving, and like I said, this is, there's quite a few threads of thought that I'm going to try and weave together here. But I guess, what's most important is a family issue that I've been having. And I was hoping there would be a resolution by the time I recorded this, but now I think I might have to accept the fact that the resolution, or even the conversation that starts us down the path to the resolution, might not be coming. The person that I had a conflict with just might not be capable, or might not even be interested in trying to resolve this problem. Now, this is not an immediate family member. It's an uncle. I am happy to say that I have, you know, just excellent relationships with both of my brothers. I consider them to be two of my closest friends. We've grown much, much closer since I moved back to this area a couple years ago. And I've really, even though they were initially kind of doubtful and at times a little bit hostile towards my viewpoints, I'm happy to say that they are both now in my corner, and they are both now listeners to this show, which is very cool. My two parents, I don't see quite as much. I see my mother more than my father. My mother is encouraging, we'll say. She did buy a T-shirt. And my dad, who I would describe as kind of like a Big L libertarian slash Ron Paul Republican type, is surprisingly open-minded and curious for somebody his age, and we do have some what I would consider to be productive conversations, but that doesn't mean that there isn't an elephant that wanders around some of our family gatherings, and in this case it's more like a donkey. And this would be an uncle of mine who, you know, lives in this area and is, you know, very present at most family gatherings. And these family gatherings are important to me because I have, you know, young nieces and nephews that I care about seeing. Like I said, I enjoy spending time with my mother and my two brothers. And I actually have a lot of respect for my mother because this uncle that I'm talking about is her brother, and they had just the most demented upbringing. And my mother spent, you know, a lot of time working through this in therapy, and her brother did not, so I kind of get a glimpse of some of the things that would be going on maybe inside my mother's head that are projected outward by this this uncle of mine. I mean, their parents were first generation born in America Italian immigrant Roman Catholics who got divorced. Like, that's just not a group of people who got divorced. Now, the environment that they must have grown up in, it must have looked like a scene from The Godfather at Michael Corleone's sister's house there, just with dishes flying around the dining room and curtains being ripped down. I can't imagine what her and her two brothers went through as children in that in that kind of a household. I remember being little and my mother, like me and my mother, going through all these pictures of her childhood, and they were all ripped. And I'm like, why is some guy's head ripped out of all these pictures? And she's like, oh, that's my father. My mother did that. She ripped the guy's head out of every picture. Like, that's insanity. It's just insanity. So that's what they were used to. And obviously, as I look at our adult relationship between my mother and I, I'm kind of happy that she did all that. Because I could see what would be going on the inside of her through my uncle, I think, if she hadn't. Anyway, a couple weeks ago, after, I mean, I think the most important thing is my uncle is somebody I would describe as, you know, a liberal, kind of like the ultimate status type, just like every fantasy that you can hold on to as a statist. The police are there to protect you. They're doing a good job. When they have a conflict with somebody, they're right. World War II was heroic. The atomic bomb was necessary. Franklin Roosevelt saved the country from the Depression. I mean, I can't even mention the name Franklin Delano Roosevelt without seeing this man's eyes just alight with this fantasy of, you know, like, as the winter months approached and the nights grew colder and darker, the harsh realities of the industrialist capitalist society grew increasingly palpable for the masses. At night, they huddled together for warmth, knowing that the unforgiving dead of winter would soon fall upon them. Then, just as they were about to abandon all hope, in rode President Roosevelt on a white horse, a majestic red cape trailing behind him in the icy breeze. He dismounted and approached the masses with a confident stature. He spoke. He said, I will lead you all into a new age of prosperity. I will go and take money from the filthy, evil, greedy rich, and I will use it to create jobs for you. For example, I will come back tomorrow with some shovels, and you will divide it into teams of two, and every team will get a shovel, and then you will take turns. One of you will dig a hole, and then the other will fill the hole back in with the same dirt that the first person dug out. And I will pay for this. I'm dead serious. And then, along with the sense of accomplishment that you will feel for contributing to the future of a productive society, you will also have money that you can use to buy homes and Oldsmobiles and cigarettes and those queer-looking things that hold the cigarettes that are so popular during this time period. And then we will all be happy and prosperous, thanks to me. That kind of stuff. I mean, I'm just trying to kind of paint a picture of, you know, where this guy is coming from. And if you're listening to this and you're a liberal and you're like, wow, I never thought I'd be able to masturbate to a podcast, you're welcome. Enjoy it. You're just going to have to keep playing that part over and over again, because the rest of this you will not find very arousing, I promise. So anyway, to these people, facts don't matter. The truth doesn't matter. Facts are like tennis balls, and their fantasies are like a brick wall that you can try forever, you're not getting through. For years, I did not understand what I was dealing with people like this. I used to think if I could learn enough about history, if I could learn enough about economics, that it would become this key that would open these doors to understanding, and that these people could see, just if I could provide enough context about the past to illuminate what's going on now, there would be these, oh my God, I've been all wrong about everything. But in these discussions, what I've realized is that the goal is not the truth. The goal is not understanding. The goal is not a better understanding of where we are or where we've been. The goal is fantasy. The goal is simply the perpetuation of fantasy. Now, how did I ultimately realize this? Well, you know, I just recorded this show, School News, that I really wasn't happy with. I felt that it was acrimonious. I felt that it was opportunistic. I didn't like my tone. And it was kind of like, these two teachers, one got arrested for, in a prostitution sting, and the other one got arrested for growing marijuana in their house. And, you know, I could do the whole hypocrisy angle, like, oh, look at them. These are the examples. These are the role models. This is what they do. How outrageous. But we beat that subject to death on this show. Right? I mean, it's not like the hypocrites don't keep handing me more ammo to pursue the hypocrisy angle with, but it's old, it's tired, and it's not productive. So then I started, you know, thinking about this email that I received from a public school teacher. And, yeah, first of all, I want to say I'm not going to spend 30 seconds of my time trying to figure out ways that I can better tailor this show to public school teachers. They're not the target audience. But I would, I guess, like to have more of a hand out, a hand that isn't there to slap them in the face. And I don't just mean this with bureaucrats and people who are benefiting the most from the violation of the non-aggression principle, because most of those people, I would say just about all of those people, are entirely unreachable. There's no point that anything that I could say, no matter how coherent, no matter how consistent, no matter how filled with unquestionable facts it is, it falls on deaf ears when you're talking about people like that. I'm sorry about the ticking directional noise. I'm doing a lot of turning here. But yeah, the goal is not understanding. It's not an investigation. It's just a perpetuation of fantasy. Then I started thinking, so these are the threads of thought kind of coming together here. My dissatisfaction with this school news episode where I'm, you know, congratulating these teachers who, one got busted for marijuana and one got busted for prostitution. You know, saying, hey, buddy, who got busted for prostitution? You've been working in the culture of government school employment for 40 years. You know, this coercive institution. And you said, hey, I'm a guy, I'm horny, I got $50, you're a prostitute, or so he thought. Can we make a deal? Congratulations on trying to establish a voluntary arrangement. That's like a contract. Good for you. That's a foreign concept for most people in your profession. And the teacher who got busted for pot, that was kind of like saying, hey, you know, despite, you know, the conformity of your union where they're trying to mix everybody in this same safe group and get them all to parrot the same crap, and not to mention the fact that you exist in an environment or you work in an environment where you're basically training children to be obedient conformists, good for you for demonstrating that you think adults should be able to do what they want in their own homes and with their own bodies. So I kind of presented these two folks as like the heroes of the 2010-2011 school year so far. But for me to congratulate a gym teacher on wanting sex and based on what he's used to, trying to establish a voluntary relationship with a hooker despite, the culture of employment that he's been used to, like, hey, buddy, congratulations on wanting sex and not raping somebody, that's not exactly putting out the honey for anybody. You know, certainly not the public school teachers. And Jen, this girl I got the email from, she wasn't the first person to send an email saying, you know, I really agree with where you're coming from and kind of reaching out and kind of asking for suggestions. But one more thread of thought was this relationship show that we just did where I talked about my own difficulties in the past and my own missteps in understanding some pretty significant aspects of personal freedom. Now, when these things first started to hit me, I kind of felt a little bit hypocritical reflecting on the last few years and how much criticism I've thrown at people who fail to understand freedom on a political or educational level, when the truth was I wasn't grasping it on a personal level. And it led me to think, could I use this experience, could I use this realization to maybe develop a little bit more empathy and a little bit more understanding? And just a little bit more of a warm and fuzzy approach to trying to present the ideas of liberty, of non-aggression, of self-ownership to people who are statists. Could I do that? So at the beginning of this show, I was talking about this family issue that I had been having that I'll go over real quick. And because this is just really the event that got me thinking. Now, the person that I had a problem with, this uncle, not a relationship I'm really looking to continue. And I've never, ever really, really thought about discontinuing my relationship with anybody in my family before, except this person. Now, he's always going to be around, though, because, like, we have family events. I care about seeing my nieces and nephews. I like spending time with my brothers. My mother is not going to defoo him, right? Even though she recognizes a lot of the problems that I've mentioned to her about this guy. So, like, he's going to be there. Like, nobody has ever... Like, my father completely disconnected himself from his mother. And that's the only example of anything like that we have in our family. You know, despite a historical large amount of dysfunction. But let's focus on this story about Uncle. So, he and I recently had this falling out. It wasn't political. It wasn't like some debate we were having. It was personal. Every once in a while... Me and my brothers go to his house. He lives in a condo for dinner. It's kind of irregular, but it happens once in a while. And we watch a movie and we talk a little bit and, you know, it's a good chance to hang out. So he hadn't done it in a while and I went over there and I made a request since he lives in this condo. I said, do you mind if I go use the gym? Because he lives on the seacoast and the place where I usually like to go to the gym is all the way back in Manchester. That's like 25, 30 miles. And he flips out. He completely just flips out on me, for even asking. Like, I should be, where did I even muster the audacity to ask to go use the fitness center in his building for a half an hour? So, was totally unexpected, and really, even for this person, I was like, wow, that is just an insane overreaction. What I gathered and what I remembered from the past was he was very apprehensive about the whole condo environment, because I think there's something about like condo associations and homeowners associations like HOAs that tend to attract people who are really kind of pissed that they missed the boat on the whole like communist spy on your neighbors or fascist let's control every aspect of your life kind of scene in the 20th century, and they're trying to like relive some of that through their homeowners, their HOA or their condo association. Like, oh, you have too much furniture on your deck and not enough flowers on your front porch. And just maniacs. So, like, this is that kind of environment. So, apparently, nobody who doesn't live in the building is allowed to use the fitness center. And he was probably a little anxious about what might happen if somebody came down there and saw me. Which would be like a very simple thing to say. I am not comfortable with you doing that because I have anxiety about, you know, what the repercussions might be for me if I let you use it. But instead, it was just he launched into this tirade about like he was trying to make me feel guilty for even asking. And then he just puts out this litany of excuses like, well, I'd have to give you the key to let you in. It's been raining a lot. There might be it's in the basement. It might be flooded. And I said, well, you used to let... I don't see what the problem is. You used to let Blake, my other brother, use it all the time. And he's like, oh, that was years ago, and just blah, 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 blah. When it would have been very simple just to say, I am anxious about you using it. But the more I thought about this, the more it bothered me. And the more I realized how this person, like, sure, this is his property, so if he doesn't want to let me use it, that's fine. But this is somebody in ways that actually matter who has never extended a helping hand to anybody. Like, if one of me and my brothers was having a problem, get over it. Life's tough, you know? Could never be empathetic, could never be supportive. At times, his input was almost destructive or counterproductive. So this is a person who, in every way that really matters, as far as I'm concerned, from my observation, has been a complete failure in being a genuine help or offering genuine support to anybody that he claims to care about. Now, at the beginning, I said, we have this elephant, but it's actually a donkey. That's kind of a silly political joke. My uncle's very liberal. So if I talk about, like, taxation as theft, it's always like, well, it's not theft to me. No force to me. I'm happy to pay. That money helps people. So it's interesting that somebody who has proven again and again to be completely, as far as being helpful is concerned, just to be completely impotent in his own life, has all these fantasies about government welfare. Because if I start, you know, going through the statistics of welfare with him, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I'm not getting through. Tennis ball, tennis ball, tennis ball, tennis ball. He does not care about any of that stuff. So when I looked at this man's personal life and I compared it to his political views, wow, there was like a really strong connection there. Right? There's a real strong connection between kind of knowing that you're not being good or helpful or empathetic and feeling like you have no power, because I don't think, you know, non-psychopathic people want to be bad or mean to others, especially the people they claim to care about. But at the same time, you have all of these fantasies about this group of strangers who don't care about you or anybody else. So what's going on there? So if you're a person who is not good at helping other people, and you live under the iron fist of an organization that takes 30 to 50% of your income and claims it's for the purpose of helping people, well, boy, isn't that like an anxiety relief match made in heaven? And I realized, not just through the situation with my uncle, but how I had used similar evasive and dishonest strategies in my own life to minimize anxiety when the truth was thrown in my face. And that's what we're going to talk about.
So I'm going to cut it off there for today. We will pick up this discussion soon. I'll bring in another voice and another brain to contribute. And that brain is a big one inside the head of my friend Wes Bertrand, and we will take it from there. Before we end today, I just wanted to read you that email that I received from this public school teacher. Her name was Jen. I did extend an invitation to her to come on School Sucks Podcast. It was a little while ago now, and I haven't heard anything back. So I'm hoping she's okay. I'm hoping that her email isn't too closely monitored, and you know, maybe somebody from the union came to pay her a visit, that kind of a thing. We'll see. But I hope she's well, and I hope she does eventually get back to me, and I hope she'll consider coming on the program. So here's what she had to say. Hey, Brett, I found your website today while I was doing some research for a unit plan I'm teaching on schooling versus education. Great podcast and nice website. This is my 6th year teaching in an urban public high school. Don't pity me, really. And I've slowly been teaching my students what school is really about. Sometimes they feel empowered, sometimes confused, sometimes totally pissed at me for telling them the truth. We are supposed to teach to the standards, but since I'm in a school that serves a majority of students of color, I find that nobody really cares what I teach. That's why I've been looking for places like your website to get resources for my curriculum and sneaking it in where I can. My master's program is about school, culture, and society, and I didn't even question the purpose of, quote, school until I was in my 3rd year teaching and 1st year of my program. I'd always taught a cultural studies curriculum in my classroom, and I used a lot of my own resources, but I couldn't pinpoint what was bothering me until I finally read Chapter 2 of Paulo Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed. My mind was blown. Since then, I've been trying to turn my students into little radicals. Does it work? I don't know. Am I wasting my time teaching in this huge high school? Sometimes I feel like I am. But I feel like my students need someone who is willing to plant a seed in their minds. If I left, I would be replaced and forgotten fairly quickly, I'm sure. But they need to think. Why is it that my remedial classes are mostly black males? Why have these same kids failed over and over since kindergarten? I refuse to be someone who just gives up on them like school did. Maybe I'll get burned out in the next few years. Maybe I'll stay there for 6 more years. Maybe I'll one day find a way to start the school all of my friends and I joke about. Who knows? Anyway, 3 years in and I'm still just beginning. It's really overwhelming. Do you have any suggestions of things I should read first and sneak into my classroom? Thanks for putting the School Sucks Project out there. I feel slightly guilty this afternoon when I was on your website while I was sitting in my classroom after school, but oh well, they shouldn't have unblocked my internet if they didn't want me thinking at school. Peace. Jen. So I thought that was very nice, and I certainly understand the feeling and remember the feeling of, you know, having done all of this research about the problems and issues in education and thinking it was a mind map, but it was really just this giant collage because there was nothing connecting it all in the middle. Like, there was all these different issues and all these different problems and all these different horror stories, but there was no anchor. There was no center. And when I began to understand the philosophy of liberty and, you know, the problem of trying to provide a service by aggressing against the recipients of that service, that really made a lot of things come into focus, I would have to say. And of course, you know, when you think about the fact that government education is made possible by aggression, not just the funding, but also the attendance, you know, government school is compulsory, that kind of revealed a little bit more about the dark nature, the dark intentions, the dark historical intentions of this institution. Because if you're being forced to do something, chances are it's not good for you. And that is definitely true with the government schools. So yeah, there's plenty of great books to read. I'm staring at a couple right now. The Night is Dark and I'm Far From Home by Jonathan Cazole. The Underground History of American Education by Jonathan Taylor Gatto. There are some books that deal more with pedagogy. One I can think of is Punished by Rewards by Alfie Cohen. I've mentioned that on this show a few times before. And another one that I would recommend is called The Case Against Adolescence by Robert Epstein. It's actually a very scholarly, well-researched look at the very concept of adolescence, kind of a made-up period of life that is not even more than 100 years old. If you're working with high schoolers, that might be worth jumping into as well. But as I suggest to everybody, Wes's book, Complete Liberty, if you want the broader picture. Another one is Murray Rothbard's For a New Liberty, The Libertarian Manifesto. And if you just have, 10 minutes to spare here or there, go on YouTube and search for The Philosophy of Liberty, a very educational 10-minute video. So if you're listening, I hope this is helpful. I hope you get back to me and to Jen or, you know, any other teacher in the government schools who has begun asking themselves these questions. All I can really say is that you're on the right track. So I'll leave it there for today. Like I said, we'll be back in a couple days with more. Until then, thank you for listening. Turned away from it all like a blind man. Sat on a fence, but I don't want. Keep coming up with love, but it's so slashed and torn.